Excused.
Bob Feingold.
Here.
Ken Glassman.
Here.
Bill Hobbs.
Here.
Roxy Huber.
Excused.
Michael Kitis.
Excused.
Representative Marostica.
Excused.
Harold Maroney.
Excused.
Tom Maris.
Here.
Senator May.
Here.
Rico Munn. Annette Quintana.
Here.
Here. All right. We have a quorum, right? Right. Well, welcome to our newest board member. And actually, we have three newly appointed board members, but two of them are not new, so we fail on the introduction of you two.
So are you new?
But welcome, Annette. First order of business is the recognition and salute for service of the outgoing board member, Greg Jenick. We are sorry to see you go, but it's been great to serve with you on this commission and on this board, and I think in the IMC previous to this.
No.
Well, you've just been around so long.
It is a blur.
A good blur, but we certainly appreciate your service and a commitment you made and getting this thing going. I mean, 4 years ago when it was just a piece of paper signed by the governor, we kind of remember the first few meetings saying, well, what do we do now? And you were someone that actually knew what to get done now. I'd like to open it up for anybody else to share their remarks. I know Greg would like to say two words.
I would.
That was it.
That's it.
Okay. That's perfect.
Oh, you're not going to get off quite that easily, Mr. Jenick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for those of you that are somewhat new to the board, it was pretty incredible the challenge and the undertaking as this was first launched, because it was clearly a clean slate of paper. And I know that they looked out at other states and tried to see what was working and what wasn't working. And Greg, you brought such a nice, clean perspective to that, and understanding the business part of it. One of the strengths, I believe, of this authority board is the combination of private and public sector. And in the private sector role, I think you taught us all a lot about how undertakings like this could function well using a different filter or metric to look at it. And it's been a great pleasure to have you on the board and work with you, and wish you the best, and don't lose touch.
Thank you.
Jack Grossman.
I'd just like to say, Greg, what a pleasure it's been serving with you. No matter what was going on, you had a positive attitude and a fabulous sense of humor.
To catch some folks up to date, Greg was actually a contender for the director's job at one point of this board, and
thankfully
we
not.
Got to know him. he's thrilled to be leaving, and we appreciate your willingness to serve and what you went through with that. I mean, everything when this was new was we would spend hours trying to figure out how to have a checking account or where we were going to have meetings. I remember talking with our treasurer at the time from my home in Colorado Springs on my cell phone, which had very poor coverage, so I'd have to go out and get on the roof of my house to get these conference calls going. But we've come a long way, and we certainly wouldn't be here today without all that you did for the process. So with that, sharing our appreciation for your service, somebody had made it, somebody else's direction, a lovely plaque to commemorate your time with us. So that.
Thank you all. It's been a pleasure. No, it has been a sincere privilege, and I've had a whole lot of fun working with all of you too. And great relationships. It was fun in the early days. But whatever value, I don't know that I deserve the triumphs that you proclaimed, but whatever contribution I made to help move this forward, thank you. But it was a team effort, very much so, from everyone and from all of us. And we used to have a whole lot of committee meetings as well as the board meetings, and a lot of time into those. But it's off and running, and I think it's a great time to move on, and welcome, Annette. It's great to know that you're stepping in as well. And, you know, you've taken to a whole new plateau. But if at any point in time I can help historically or in any capacity, I'm more than happy to do so. I'm still a big cheerleader. So.
Senator May.
Greg, I want to thank you not just for SIPA, but for the other work you've done for the state, even prior to the SIPA being in there. Greg was executive director over of AEA, American Electronic Association, and did a lot to educate a lot of us legislators up there along the way. For that, too, I want to thank you.
Making the extra effort to come to the meetings with an incredibly tight schedule like everybody has, but many times he'd be here with his bags in the hallway on his way to catch an international flight, but making time to be here to attend the meetings meant a lot to us. Hoffengel?
Greg, I want to thank you for your service, too. We both had an opportunity to be workers in those many, many committee meetings, and Greg's a tireless guy who always has the bright ideas, and we really appreciated having those to get us on the right track. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you both. Enough. There's work to do.
Here's your custom cover for your... I bought that.
Thank you.
Per diem, it went up last year. All right, first order of business, approval of the February meeting minutes. Everybody have a chance to review them?
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion to adopt the minutes of last month's meeting? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. That is unanimous. Committee reports. Greg Rippey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, if you would pass a couple of those down, and Don, if you'd pass a couple of those.
Could I have one?
We were talking about that. You have in your packet the P&L balance sheet as ending as of January 31, and as has been the case for a number of months. This is very important, a little drawing of how things don't work sometimes. As you can see, ending January, we increased the bottom line by a total of $19,245. I'm going in a moment to make a request of this board to accept an amended budget for the authority to the employee wages and benefits line. But what I'd like to share with you before that is what I handed out to you is, and Senator May, I talked about how we were looking against budget, and you said I don't have that sheet. So what I have brought with this sheet, ignore the first one that says dollars over budget because I have it for each month, and this is just the last sheet that shows you the roll-up of it. But from July 1 to end of January, net income of $88,768 against a budget of $69,000 even. So to date for this fiscal year, we're over budget, where our net income exceeds budgeted amount by almost $20,000. The request that I would like of this board is to amend the approved budget. The original budget showed employee costs of $14,000 per month. I would like to amend that to $15,200 for the remaining months to June 30 to reflect, and I'm going to use this opportunity to introduce to you newest SIPA employee, one of three now, Chris Smith. Chris is the person that we selected to be the CMS coordinator. He is on loan to OIT. I have created, and Richard, cover your ears, my own MOU with the Office of Innovation or Information Technology to just say, here's what we do, here's what OIT does, and they task Chris out. He just started Monday. His original first tasking, I believe, is going to be primarily the governor's office needs, the governor's website. And Chris, why don't you tell me what you're doing since Monday?
First task is to work on the governor's office's website, which includes governor, lieutenant governor, president's website, as well and cybersecurity, and to make sure
so what we have in, thanks Chris, and welcome. What we have in this understanding is John Connolly, primarily in the Office of Information Technology, will use Chris for CMS coordination as needed to which agency is in the most immediate need for it. And so it's not my directing of him and setting the task. We are responsible for all the employee wages, HR functions, and through the agreement with Colorado Interactive, he actually works over at Colorado Interactive. It's very good arrangement where he can be with the CMS experts over there, as well as the web developers that are working right there. And you know, thank you very much, CI, for allowing that to happen, because not only is it good for our budget, I think it gives us a better resource with Chris and be able to utilize him that way. And if something changes, we'll change it. But I would like the board to approve a change in the budget to reflect that new hire.
Question? Bob Feingold?
I don't understand.
Bob, pull a mic up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't quite understand what Chris does for SIPA. Maybe I'm just too thick this afternoon, but I don't quite get it.
Sure. For SIPA, and this was the board discussion that we had here about hiring someone, we continued to see a pain point being in the content management system, that there was a lack of resource in the migration process and in keeping websites up to the level that the agencies expected them to do, simply because they didn't have the FTE or the resource allocation to do it. So the authority said, you know, we've got a projected budget increase of $164,000 by year end. This would be a good use of SIPA funds to be able to not necessarily take Chris or whoever it was and directly task them, but allow the Office of Information Technology, which is more in touch with the agencies, to be able to direct their work, although we'd be responsible for all the rest of it. Does that clarify, Bob?
Yes, that helps. And so, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to make a comment about what Chris is going to do, Greg. I would like for us to analyze some of the web pages of other states and pick up the best of that kind of stuff and implement some of that into our operation, because you know we don't have the total knowledge of all of this as to what looks good and works good, and anything we can plagiarize from somewhere else that makes us better, I think we ought to do that.
Senator, thank you for that. And one of the strengths that Chris had coming to us was he had the experience with FatWire that some of the other applicants didn't have, and so we didn't have to spend much time training him. He'll continue to get stronger on FatWire, being fully committed to it. I agree with what you say, you know, and some of, we've had Kathalia Robinette in here telling us about what the best of the web is, what the criteria are on best of the web, and I think that's all well and good. But as I've told you before, it's not my expectation that Colorado simply goes out and recreates what other states are doing that are good, but to jump one generation and a year from now other states are looking at Colorado and saying, we should emulate what Colorado does because they're doing some really awesome things on their website. That's been my charge to CI. We've had joint strategy meetings to point towards that. They have great developers that are committed to that, and I'll explain a little more later to that point. And yeah, you're right. We're going to plagiarize everything we can, but that's not going to be good enough.
It just had a couple questions regarding your use of terminology. You said a few minutes ago that there was an increase in the SIPA the budget for SIPA. You mean do you mean that that's the operating income for the organization or the expense clarify. The expenses for the organization?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I meant to communicate there was the fact that as we looked at a equity or fund balance at the beginning of this fiscal year of approximately $450,000, we then looked at that was a fund balance that we felt comfortable if we had to move on outside our contract with Colorado Interactive, it was a number that maybe we could buy the depreciated assets and then move on to another place. So we looked at 07-08 fiscal year as being zero budget balanced. So spend whatever we take in from revenues. But even in accepting the budget that I put forward in July, it showed a increase in retained earnings or net income at the end of the year, however you want to look at it. It really is retained earnings by the way you look at a balance sheet, of $164,000. We've taken a look at that, and we've done two things this year to reduce that net income for the year that was projected to be $164,000. One was our expenditures with North Highland in engaging them on the business feasibility. The second is the hiring of another employee. Those two functions, it looks like now we're going to be down at about $143,000, still adding to beginning fund balance.
Thank you.
And if so, year to date through January, we're increasing by $88,000 to that fund balance. I think we'll continue with the amended budget to end the year June 30 at approximately $143,000 to increase reserve fund.
Thank you.
Fund balance. Choose your terminology. And he can certainly tell you, I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I think we need to support motion on that much of that change of the budget.
You
would be granted a significant amount of time.
Mr. Chairman, I have been, but you did accept a I guess if you would be willing to take it as a notification to you that there's going to be a change in a line item on there. You have adopted the budget, which I will not exceed, and I have authority within those parameters.
Well, I feel comfortable not taking an action on a budget unless we saw an issue that we need to address, unless that conflicting with what I'd like to challenge or offer a suggestion. I think we really need an action.
I would just thank you, and I don't believe you need to by what our bylaws say, but I feel comfortable notifying the board if there's any change in what was projected. And clearly, when you approved the expenditure, you knew that there was going to be, but here it is.
Thank you, Osman.
Greg, can I ask you one question of clarification, because I'm not exactly sure how all this works out. Does this look like we are lending an employee to OIT? How does that directing our new employee?
As far as what they're going to be working on?
Right.
John Conley, OIT.
So the question would be yes.
Yes.
And I don't have back with me the signed MOU. We will put that up on the board as soon as I get the signed one back. Mr. Lokaitis would have brought it with him today. They agreed to it, but it clearly says the purpose of this is for the purpose of lending an employee from SIPA to the Office of Information Technology. Here are the responsibilities of SIPA. Here are the responsibilities of OIT. And in the responsibilities for OIT, it is to give them clear direction on necessary work, timeliness of work. And so that's their function. I know that many of you have probably seen lending of employees by private sector members to OIT in the past, and that was the basis on which they did it. It was on someone else's payroll. They were lent to OIT for direction as necessary. This is the same model that we're following with SIPA instead of a private sector.
And Greg, so is this a memorandum of understanding or is it a contract? Is there a beginning and end to the contract?
It's a memorandum of understanding which can be set aside at any time by either parties. They're not tied into us and we're not tied into them. But if that were to go away, I am confident that we, even if we directed the work, that we would have sufficient need for the functions that Chris is providing, that he wouldn't go away, just that relationship and that direction would go away. That is.
Well, this will be short and easy. The business committee did not meet in the last month, but I do have an expectation that we'll be meeting before the April meeting to review the annual business plan, which we're waiting on, and a subcommittee, the business portal subcommittee, as part of the working group charter for the business portal. It does say that they will meet with this subcommittee once a month. Because Dan and the participants were just kicking this off a week ago, you'll see in some of the minutes or his report that they've met twice. I thought it better to let them kind of get a few meetings under their belt and get moving. But I would expect before the April meeting, we will have that subcommittee. The reason we did the subcommittee is we have many executive directors on the business committee. They need not be that far down in the weeds on the business portal specifically. So it remains people like Bill and myself, Bob Feingold, on that subcommittee. So, two upcoming meetings in the next 4 weeks, and we'll get them out to you.
Craig, Executive Director's update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to just tag on to what Mr. Glassman had to say there. This Business Express, whatever it's going to eventually be called, and the requirement gatherings that we're doing on it, they have agreed on a project charter. Thank you so much to the executive directors that have made their people available to work on this. As I told you last month, this is a pretty unique project when we're talking about multi-agency application and the collaboration that has to occur. I am confident it could not occur without the support that we are getting from the primary executive directors, that is Mr. Morris in Labor, Department of Revenue with Roxy Huber, Dora, and Secretary of State. And Bill, thank you for making Mr. Whitelaw available. Alice is just, every one of the people that have been tasked to us, Becky, are just, I feel we've got the best of the best out of each agency there, and we know that this is a potentially high-risk, high-visibility project and application that we're looking at, and we really need to thank the executive directors that have made their top-notch people available to us, and I'm confident that we'll reach the right collusion.
It's better than colliding.
Conclusion and move forward with this very well. The other thing that I wanted to just give you a little bit of a sense of, Dan Morrison with CI and I, we talk so often about how are we communicating to this board, and we walk away from almost every board meeting saying, you know what we're not doing? We're not energizing our board members and making them as excited about what we're doing right here as we are excited about it, because we see it on a daily basis, all the incredible things that are happening from Jack, absolutely the local government perspective. We've got Jamestown with an EGE now for our first city. We have that back in, a couple of the counties. And we have some very interesting feelers that are out there right now. City of Sheridan has contacted me as far as the city. So the local government side holds a lot of potential. Bob has been kind enough to do a little bird dogging for us on the bid system and see some things that come up, such as a payment engine for Mesa State College. Higher ed has always been a tougher piece of state government in their independence or their thinking of independence, and we will be responding to that RFP for payment engine for Mesa State. We also know that if we can be successful in that, we can be successful for Western State, Fort Lewis, Adams State, any of the ones that are following the same rules within the state college system. So those are exciting. But I know that as you go back out into your personal roles of what you do, and if you have in conversation with someone, I serve on the SIPA board. Well, the first thing they're going to ask is, what is SIPA? And then you spell it all the way out and say, well, that's the Statewide Internet Portal Authority. And they go, yeah? What's that? And so it's always hard for us to go out there and communicate to colleagues and friends what it is we're doing here. And one of the things that we've been hearing ever since we launched Colorado.gov and the homepage and the website is, you know, and Senator, this is to your point specifically, is, you know, it could have some more flash. It could have some more things like RSS feeds. We hear that from Mark Weatherford and his office and the governor's office. You know, they're always wanting, can't we pump this up a little bit? And I had to ask permission to say this today because they're all sitting out there squirming, but I will not promise a date. But we are close to an entire new launch of what Colorado.gov looks like. I shared it a little bit with Mr. Lokaitis when we were back at Portland. When you put the two side by side, I hope that you're as blown away as I am by how much better this new look and feel is going to be. And I'm not going to tell you it's going to be 30 days, 45 days. I'm going to tell you that it's going to be within the next quarter. Nobody threw anything at me, so I guess. The governor will be pleased, and the governor's very happy with his site right now, and I can tell you who did most of the work on his site previously was Chris Smith. Chris's background is he was doing halftime for Evan and the governor's site, and the other halftime with as assistant to Chief of Staff, Mr. Carpenter. But now he's going to be full-time, and so we're very excited about how those sites are going to evolve, and in fact, the entirety of Colorado.gov. And I hope that when you see this launch and you walk out of here, you can say, I had something to do with that. And as you continue to see the new applications that are rolling out from driver's license renewal, I get more complaints from the people that I run into going, why isn't that available? Not driver's license renewal because it's statewide. Registration, why isn't that available here? I don't want to go down and see my clerk. I love my clerk, but I don't want to see. And I haven't heard that from Douglas County. The other thing I'd like to just quickly touch on here, because Jack and I had this conversation down in Douglas County, when you look at what should drivers or registration renewals be doing, it should be shortening the lines in courthouses. And what Jack sees is that's not happening. So why is it not happening? I've had the conversation with Dan and with Jill, and we're going back out, making sure people have the information that they need to. You know, it's kind of after the fact when somebody walks in and you go, do you know you could have done this online? But we're looking at public service announcements. We're looking at very targeted marketing, and we're probably going to use Douglas County to try and go forward on that. Because what we want to do is we want shorter lines in courthouses. We want citizens to be able to do business with government more easily than they're doing it today, and shorter lines would clearly be a metric There's Mr. Metric right there, Greg. If you all recall, he was always pounding on what's the metric, what's the metric. So, Kent, I think you've followed up him pretty well on demanding.
Are we doing anything with DOR and all the stuff that they send out to all the people paying all the money to the state on? Go online.
Absolutely. DOR has been wonderful. Every piece that goes out, whether it's vehicle registration, whether it's taxes. I just opened my tax thing the other day, and it says, you can file online, which leads to my last point of the update here, is the success that we're having with SysTest and the testing and load testing specifically of applications that we expect major activity on. Along with Mark Church and with SysTest, they have written test scripts to go out there and test the load of applications up to 4,000 an hour. One of the things that came back was there were some errors that were coming back. Why were they coming back? Did some load balancing. Mark has started, well, you're probably done, on putting those in the website so that they do it. We just finished testing our point-to-point, which Dan will probably talk to you a little bit about. That's the interactive with our other vendors that we sell driver's license information to. We ran that test last week, 4,000 tests in an hour, zero errors. And what we find that gives us is a pretty good comfort level that when we're deploying a new application, or we know in things like tax time, the week of April 15th, that we are in the correct position to handle those types of loads. The other test that SysTest has been doing for us is on our content management system. It's a somewhat modified off-the-shelf product that can go out there and check all our links, because we know we're not always going to have Senator May out there checking all our links to see if they work. So we're working with an automated tool to do the link checking. And it's got to be a little bit more than link checking, because what you'll find out sometimes is, yeah, the link works, but it doesn't go to where it's supposed to go. And we don't just want an answer back going, yeah, there's not a broken link here, but how can we ensure that they're going to where they're going? So that testing has been going on very vigorously here for the last 2 months. And am I missing something?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. That's it for my update.
You know, something about an automated tool.
Mr. Chair.
Senator May.
A couple of comments, Greg. One of the successes I've had in getting word out has been to service clubs. Do we have some way we could touch base with some of these service clubs and tell them about, particularly about re-registration of vehicles? And you're right, the word's not really out there yet. If you talk to people, they get excited when you tell them about it, but they don't know that they can do that. So
I have given a number of presentations to service clubs around the state. I gave a presentation to Mr. Janik's Rotary Club at one time down Colorado Springs. I'll put that on my list to try and do two or three service clubs a month as a presentation.
Well, it shouldn't be just you. I can do that too. The rest of us can do that when we're talking to them or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you what we can
but
do
that,
then.
That'll reach people who will actually use it.
I think.
Greg, didn't we provide some of our colleagues under the dome with some of this last year to help them share
Sure.
all the online activities?
We did, and I think what we can do is create a PowerPoint presentation for any of our members that would like to go and talk to Kiwanis, Rotary, whoever, if they just want to go do it. One that, first of all, is a consistent message that we're sending out there. And Kathy, if you'll put that as an action item for me, I will create that so we can have
kind of little handout that you could hand them and say, okay, this is how you do your registration.
Yeah, we get these building all the time. And you know, one of the projects we're working on right now with the Department of Public Safety is working with their hiring program for state troopers, and they have got donated to them 9 billboards around the Front Range, and they're going to be big billboards up there about how to, if you want to become a state trooper, you know, it's an honorable profession, and right down the bottom, Colorado.gov, and so we're going to have Colorado.gov being advertised as such in some big billboards in the near future.
Along the same line as this comment, I haven't seen anything on any of the TV media or radio media about Colorado.gov. Have those news agencies or media agencies pushed back on, let's say, interviewing you, interviewing Senator Cadman, talking about Colorado.gov? You had trouble getting in the door at 9 News, 7 News, 4, you know, those media outlets?
I can't say that I've gone and beat on their door and told them I would like you to interview me about this. One of the interesting things we do see as a dynamic is as we put out press releases on an ongoing basis, we get picked up more out of state than we do within our own state. I don't know why. And Jill, maybe when Dan?
Dan would like to chime in.
We actually do have pretty good uptake in the Colorado media when we have a specific press release. For example, when we announced the driver license renewal program, which we branded as Vroom, that got picked up and run on every TV station that I get on my cable TV. It was a one-day event. It's a one-day blast.
Yesterday's news.
And then we have follow-up media stories in the Colorado Business Journal and other media outlets. I get press clippings of all those things, and if you'd like, as a board, I'd be glad to share those with you as we go forward. But we were very selective and targeted in the way we do our media announcements, and it's proven to be more effective to be highly selective and targeted for a specific audience than it is to, for example, put up billboards. Billboards are a very expensive way to expose your message to a lot of folks who drive by on the highway, but the question is, do they retain that, and then when they get to their office, actually do anything with it? Most of my colleagues in the 20 other states will tell you there's a better way to spend the same amount of money and get a lot more impact. But we've actually had pretty good uptake when we've wanted the media to cover a story in the appropriate press release. I've been personally fairly pleased with that. We haven't done a broad-based marketing in the public media.
And interestingly enough, and I was sharing this with Senator May, as I tell you, I think we get more exposure outside the state than we do in. I get a call probably an average of twice a month from some state government outside or from some media outlet outside the state asking me about Colorado, varying things, the governance model, the data center sharing. Got a call from Mississippi today as they are asking about, you know, Colorado's the only one that has the portal as it exists sharing location with a data center. We'd like to have a conference call with you and talk about that. People from the outside are more excited about what we're doing, it seems, than locals.
Well, it that's great. But it seems to me if the Department of Revenue put up the Vroom site, you know, funded the Vroom site, and our metric is reducing lines for citizens, that we need to get that information out to citizens in every possible way possible. And Becky, you're doing as much as you can with your budget. And there's a need for some brainstorming on other ways to get it done.
Is there have you developed a marketing plan for the site?
For the site or just in general? We have one, and we'll have another one to discuss as we, this is the draft business plan, and it'll be in there as the marketing plan. We have one.
So it's a subset of the business plan,
yes.
Not an independent,
correct,
separate marketing plan itself with targets and measurements and outcomes and things like that, independent?
Mm-hmm. And if I can back up a little bit to some history with this authority. When we first put out the RFP with IVMV, marketing was a subset of that, and that was actually a very clearly defined activity that would be outsourced. And actually, they put together a very good response to that with a company called BAT here in town. But in the very beginning of where we have been, it didn't appear to be the best spent dollars because we didn't have that much product in which to market. The second part of what they were proposing were more of focus group activities of marketing, marketing research, if you will. We don't believe in the mantra, build it and they will come. We're not trying to just build an application because we think that's what citizens should want. And so that research part of it is, I think, is more difficult, and we've probably done a poorer job on that part of it. But our adoption rates would say we're doing a pretty good job of it, but we don't have the data to back it up, such as spending money to go out and do focus groups.
Mr. Glassman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greg, switching gears just a little bit on the new web page, for the rest of the board, I've actually seen this twice because Greg giggles like a giddy teenage kid over a new car, and he says, come look what I got on my computer, and I appreciate you walking me through that, but I guess I'd also like to see, before it launches, I'd like to see a presentation really to the board as a whole, and I'd like to understand, because I'm no expert at this, right, but I don't know that I could even build a great website, but I'd like to know kind of the methodology. What's wrong with the old one? What should be our goals and objectives? You know, what do we want to accomplish with the new one? And before it launches, how have we kind of accomplished that? And so I think that would be pretty easy, and I'm sure the CI folks, very professional, they'll know how to kind of express that. And I ask for that because the old administration, prior to leaving, went through a rebranding process. And boy, they did everything from the colorful Colorado signs at our borders that somebody almost got fired for trying to change to, you know, the business cards and the whole bit. And I just would want to make sure that, I believe that this website was part of that branding, right? And so if the old administration 18 months ago came up with a very thorough marketing rebranding and the other things aren't going to change and we're changing the website, that there is some symmetry or that they know what we're doing, vice versa. Would you just comment on those two things, and then I have one other?
Yeah, if you clarify who they is. You just said that they know what we're doing.
Well, at that point, and I'll help identify this, but it was the Office of Economic Development, the Small Business Development Centers. I think the Tourism Board might have had something to do with this. I don't know. I guess we'd have to go back and ask some of the people that were part of the old administration what encompassed their whole rebranding.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. And what we have as a website is not just as a result of rebranding Colorado. Some of the fonts that are out there, and if you look at colorado.gov, that Colorado and the font and the color and the size, yeah, that was part of it. My message that I have received back fairly clear is that that branding is not a priority for this administration as much as it was in the previous. And so what that has led in a couple instances to is, even though we do have some very clear protocol on URLs and domain names that we're trying to push forward through for consistency, it is not a driver on making sure that every website looks exactly like that. So we now have more flexibility than we previously did on agency websites, even though we still use the same set of templates for them to design on. There's a little bit more flexibility, and that doesn't have to be quite as high. And you and I had a conversation a couple months ago on this homepage, and you know, who prioritizes where things are, how does this get selected, and I've engaged in that conversation with the folks at CI, and we've come up with, that's an excellent question, you know, who decides some of those things, and it is, my finding is, it's kind of internal, they kind of internally look at it and say this is the best. One of the other things that we're going to do as we launch this new site, and we've talked to a number of agencies about this, is the concept of, let's highlight an agency every couple months. If it's coming up on hunting season, if we can have a highlight on there about DOW and hunting or fishing. If it's tax season, let's highlight the Department of Revenue and try and have something that's really dynamic on a regular basis going on that highlights one of our agencies as partners, and I think that gives them something to do with. So your question on do we have the feedback back and forth with the Office of Economic Development? The quick answer to that is no, we haven't. Back to your other question about the board reviewing it and getting a sense and feedback on it, we'll absolutely do that. One of the things that makes it a little bit more difficult, I believe, for us to do that, if we were looking at next month and we weren't ready to launch at that time, we're sitting in a public meeting, do we really want that out there for somebody to throw arrows at something that is not a final product? And I would leave that up to the board, but I think there's some danger in doing that. The danger is if it was going to happen in 15 days after that, and the board said they'd like to take a look at it, are you willing to wait another 15 days till next board meeting? That's your decisions.
We're going to go to Mr. Glassman for a quick follow-up, and then we're going to go to Mr. Morris and then Senator May.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need to see that pre-launch. I get what you say about the arrows. The methodology, I think from a policy perspective, that's what this board should be here to do. Make sure that the methodology aligns with what we're saying. And as a compliment to CI, I think that, you know, at the current one, you open it up and right dead center of the page, there's about 12. And the first one on that list was pesticide applications. I'm a very urban guy. I don't know when you apply pesticides, but I wasn't very thrilled about seeing pesticides. Since that has evolved like, I don't know, every couple weeks. And the stuff that's up there now in that center portion is very relevant, very evolving things. And I know that before Martin Luther King Day, within like 72 hours of MLK Day, there was a special alert put up to community things that were going on. So my compliments for getting that done. And I think before we meet again in April, it will be tax time. And so I'd love it if we had links to revenue that highlight not only taxpayer services, but motor vehicle, driver's license, et cetera. April's a pretty big month for them. So my compliments on the past part, and please keep that methodology rolling.
If you would like, what I can share with you is the Center for Digital Government, as they do the best of the web, they have criteria on which they measure. That is some of the methodology that we use. And it doesn't mean that we try and meet every one of those. Some of them may not seem germane to the state of Colorado on our website. But there is methodology, and we can share that. And that's a broad template on which our designers start with.
Good. Great.
Don?
If I could just step back half a step. Is marketing a piece of the contract?
It is. It is.
What generally does it require, or does it say?
I would have to go back and look at the contract and say.
Is it as simple to say that they are obligated to perform marketing of this product?
Yes.
So all these questions about marketing are really for CI to answer.
They are, and they're the ones that do this. They're the ones that, and CI looks at it as it's in their best interest to market. That is their product. That is what drives revenue to the portal, the adoption. And it is in their best interest also, even if it's not a revenue-producing application, because traffic to the site, whether it's for the good of the citizens or if it has an associated revenue with it, more people are good. There's not a bad visitor to our site. We don't care if they're driving revenue or not. Some of them will drive revenue. But what we really want, and if you review back on what our mission is as an authority, to be the one place people expect to go and be able to take care of their interface with government. That's our goal. That's what we try and do. Some of it has revenue. Some of it doesn't.
It might be good to have a presentation about this issue a little bit, because I think marketing, i.e. making sure your constituents know you're even there, is such an important piece of the success of this, that it'd be nice to know a little bit more about what the obligations are under the contract, what's been done, what the plan is. I know you're talking about the business plan, but I'd like to know the connection between the marketing discussion in there and what Carter Interactive is. You know, all that would be good to have a little education about.
Sure, we can spend some time. And, you know, one of the things that always just dazzles me is sometimes how people find things on the Internet that you didn't even really intend for them to find at that time. And I'll give you an example of last year at tax time. We had the application for Pay Online up, and it was running, and we didn't focus on it at all. because frankly we hadn't done the testing to the level that we were 100% sure. We were up there high, but not 100% sure. And in those couple days, over 3,000 people found the payment online function of it and paid their taxes online with credit cards. I think those are somewhat accurate numbers, aren't they, Becky? And I go, wow, you know, we've got that kind of in a just a couple week period of people finding things on our website that we weren't even marketing. I'm not saying we shouldn't market, but it surprises me how we find some things.
And if I could really go back a couple steps, but you know, you're only as good as the people that work for you, so I really appreciate your comments about Alice Johnson and folks in my department. I'll be sure to pass them on. Thank you.
Yeah, please do.
They're great. Thank you.
Senator Maine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a couple of things to bring up. First of all, Kent, back to your issue of the branding. I was involved in that also. But branding, Colorado for economic development and visiting and so forth, might be quite different from branding for delivering products to our people within the state. In other words, I think our main mission for the SIPA is to deliver the products from the state, from the departments or whatever, for the people within the state. So that ought to be the main mission. Now, the other one, I'm not saying isn't important, you know, and the branding of our state for visitors and economic development or whatever, I mean, that's an important thing too, but I don't think we have SIPA necessarily for that. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, and that gets back around to the other thing I want to tell you about, and some people, I know that the ED certainly know about this. Senator Cadman certainly knows about this, but we have Senate Bill 155, which has been put forth from the governor, from Senator Cadman, and what that does is that's a consolidation of IT throughout the state. And it's a breakdown of the silos within those departments so that we can communicate and work together. And I think for the next, well, the bill actually is a four-year process that we're going to be doing all this. So the work really starts after the governor signs that bill. And we're going to be working our can off on that. And I think SIPA is a major part of that issue and of that consolidation. And we need to support the departments, the OIT people, and what and getting that together. And I think that Chris coming on board is going to help that to some degree. But the work starts when the governor signs that bill, and it's going to get out, I can assure you that. And it's a major, major move, and boy, is it going to make a difference in the way we do business in Colorado after we get it implemented.
It'll get out if half the co-sponsors don't go back on the senator. What do you have, 74 co-sponsors on that piece of legislation? Yeah, that's about the number.
75.
And Senator, to your point, and this is our draft business plan that we've got, and one of the things that I'm trying to figure out how to get in there is on this consolidation to clearly talk about in the next 12 months how SIPA plays a role in that consolidation. And you were with me when I had the meeting with Mr. Lokaitis the other day, but that's a key piece of our business plan for the next 12 months is understanding and trying to dedicate resources and making it a very clear mission to support that at the level that OIT expects and that we're able to.
Dr. Feingold.
Actually, Greg covered it in talking about the criteria used by the Center for Digital Government for Best in the Web.
I had a question. I had gone through the different monthly work plans that you provided, and there's a lengthy backlog of different projects that are in the works of either being developed or rolled out and so on. And I was wondering if CI provides you with any kind of a volume forecast associated with each of the applications that are being deployed based on either other of the customers of NEIC or some other way to model it so that you can be assured that the configuration and sizing of the systems that SIPA has in place are adequately sized.
Mr. Rippey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. specific to your question, that answer is no. We don't go through volume forecasts in that I receive something that, okay, we're launching this application, and this is the expected volume in a number that's written down. One of the things we do is at every task order request or work order request that we've got, we go into a scoring process. And one of the things we do talk about that is the population demand for it. And we do go through an exercise of trying to guess what that population demand is. And that also ties into our scoring. And actually, we've redone some of our weighting on the scoring because we had the internal discussion on if we can put up an application and it serves 100,000 people, and we have another application over here that'll serve 4.5 million people. What's the weighting on the importance of how many people you serve? This one may be very important. It may be an underserved population that hasn't been served before. And so we have the discussion on, okay, and I know that's not to your point because you were really talking about demand and, you know, sizing servers and stuff like that. But we do have that discussion. How many potential people do we have that would use this site? Mr. Glassman is never going to get on the pesticide applicator site and probably apply for his license. But potentially, everybody in this room is going to be on the site to renew their driver's license. And so there's some of them that are easier to try and do a forecast on what that population and size is than others.
I just thought maybe CI would have data from other similar applications that they had deployed in other states that could be somehow prorated to in size to the size that Colorado is, as a way of being able to not necessarily have to load test everything, but base it on some other forecast on other information.
We've had that discussion with SysTest also, and we talk about a cumulative effect on Colorado.gov. What are the when this application comes on and we're talking about our servers, what is the next tipping point that we need to load test the entire site again because we've added not just testing this application but the entire site? What do? And sometimes we get way surprised, and I'll give you this example. When Treasurer Kerry Kennedy went online on the Great Colorado Payback, which is an application that we put up for it, and she's sitting there with pirate doubloons and whatever else she had in front of her, says, this is unclaimed property in the state of Colorado. You should get on Colorado.gov and see if you might be entitled to some unclaimed property that you didn't know about. Boom, 30,000 hits. Didn't really know that was going to happen. I'm not we could have said, you know, when she goes on the TV and says that, we're probably going to see a blip. It was a little bit bigger blip than we expected and handled well, but we just, some of them are swags.
Greg, I'd like to add on to what Don talked about with marketing. I think that's a great idea to revisit our marketing approach and take another look at that. One of the other things that I would like to suggest, Greg, is that when we first got started as an authority, we brought in Kathalia Robinette, and she did kind of a vision for portals throughout the country, and I think it'd be a great idea to bring her back now that we're up and running and get a report card maybe for where are we and how do we stand nationwide. I think that was what Senator May was kind of saying, how do we compare. So I'd like to see that opportunity come back again to us.
I'm sure she'd be more than willing to, and Bob said he has a very close relationship with her, and so he will make that happen. One of the things, when we had the partner conference up in Portland, she spent the better part of a day up there speaking to us, and she's very familiar with Colorado, and she would be a great resource for you to ask as a board here, hey, how's Colorado measuring up on there? And one thing, if she's nothing else, she's frank and honest.
Be honest.
Yeah.
That's right. Senator May.
I'd like to remind the board that this is a self-funding model. And it survives only if we bring in revenue. So therefore, the priorities that we've had putting this thing together, that had a big place in our decisions in making what we did next. And I think it's been successful, or we wouldn't have the surplus that Executive Director Rippey's talking about. We can't ignore that, and the better job we do with generating revenue, the more that we can do to those and for those departments who don't generate their own revenue. So our, I guess our goal is what, 20% revenue generating and 80% of what's there's free.
Yep.
And you got to have something that generates revenue to give away the free stuff too. So that's, I mean, it's a balance that we as a board have to worry about.
Any more discussion on this issue?
We haven't used taxpayer dollars.
Well, not since we got some of the Flex Fed funds, but
it was federal kickoff, yeah.
We haven't used any direct Colorado state tax dollars.
Greg, anything else?
Not on this item.
Okay.
I've got the next one, though.
You do, yes.
One of the things that I've been tasked to do was take a look at our bylaws and see some changes that might be desirable. You have been supplied with the proposed amendments to the bylaws. There aren't that many. I can go through them point by point if you'd like, or I can answer questions. Pardon me?
Sorry, you haven't been recognized.
That's a clean copy? Wow. Both were emailed to you, but what Kathy's saying is what was in the packet in front of you is just the clean copy.
This is not the modified copy.
It is the modified copy, but you were also sent the markup so you could tell what was changed.
Might be helpful to
I can go through
get
it quickly.
Those changes.
Yeah, first page, we've changed from at the very bottom from the next annual meeting to the next February meeting. We had changed that previously to be in February, and we needed to change annual to February for that purpose. On page 2, under vacancies, the very last line, added some clarification. We had a method for filling vacancies on leadership. Just put in the additional language that if any voting member seat becomes vacant, then it shall be filled by the appropriate appointing authority. That could be President of the Senate.
Mr. Glassman.
Oh. Having been elected secretary, thank you very much. I'm so honored. I did my homework as to the two sentences of responsibilities that I have. And the first, it said it shall provide over meetings of the authority absent the chair and the vice chair. But I think there's somewhere else in legislation that says the chair always needs to be an elected official. So is there a problem between this and statute?
I can answer this without our lawyer.
Wonderful. Yeah, stay off the clock.
He's on the clock. That is for running a meeting,
and
it,
okay,
it is not for saying that you are chair. Any member of the board could serve as an acting chairman for the purpose of a meeting. But for the purpose of complying with statute, the elected on an annual basis shall be an elected official.
Thank you.
So that just says that the appropriate authority shall fill our vacancy. No changes on page 3 or 4. I can tell you that on indemnification, which is really a big issue that gets overlooked unless you have a reason to look at it. And what we're looking at, since we are an authority as CHAFA is, and CHAFA has just done a significant look at all their rules and laws, we're going to take a look at what KPMG came out with CHAFA concerning indemnification. One of the things that Richard did come up with, talking to Mr. Borgman from CHAFA, is that the employees of SIPA are under CHAFA as that agreement. So the employee liability floats back up to CHAFA. They're taking a look at it. They know it. That's what they've agreed to do. So as we take a look at indemnification, we're not talking about employee indemnification. We're talking about directors and officers. And so we're going to take a look more closely at what KPMG came up with as far as exposure for directors and officers of an authority, and go back out and take a look at what the cost would be for insurance if it's necessary and if it's affordable. One of the things we found as we looked at this over 2 years ago is that there's nobody, no underwriter out there that really understands what it is we do. And as they tried to assess their risk, and since they couldn't assess their risk, they made it high. That's how underwriters work. But we think we have a better story to tell now on what we do and be able to back it up. And so we're going to be taking a look at that indemnification issue on there. So I'll go to page 5. We changed the language on number of votes that are necessary from a number of 6 to a majority of those duly appointed. The net effect of that is if we have an unfilled vacancy, the president of the Senate or hasn't filled it or the governor hasn't appointed, we don't want our quorum rules being a number, but rather a majority of those duly appointed. If we only had 10 people at the time that were duly appointed, it would be 6. If we had a full 13, it would be the 7. And so that's just a cleanup that makes it not a number, but kind of a reality check. Yes. That's actually my page 6, so maybe I'm on the wrong thing. But I haven't got to regular meetings yet.
Okay, just tell us the article and section number.
Okay, yeah, I may have just had a different format on which I printed out of. Under meetings, under the annual meeting, section 1, changing that from the office of the authority as it was originally stated in the bylaws to any meeting place with proper notice, the first Thursday of September at 1:30. And so that's the changes there. As we go forward to continuing on meetings, changing this, and this is probably the most significant change in the amended bylaws that I'm proposing to you, is putting in a number there that the authority shall hold at a minimum 9 meetings per year. As we've looked back in the last couple of years, every year we've had at least one meeting that we didn't hold. And so we are proposing to set a minimum of 9. Doesn't mean we can't hold 12, but to just clean it up a little bit, and that they will be held at the meeting place with proper notice the first Thursday of the month at 1:30. But that would give us 3 that, for reasons the board may decide, that we wouldn't hold throughout the year. There is no problem with compliance of any statutory obligation there, and a little bit more flexibility for the board to choose how it's meeting. Down on quorum, that is the same issue on a majority of those duly appointed. But then it continues under voting to say that that those members that are appointed to the board but not yet confirmed by the Senate are entitled to vote. That's the way that we had been operating. For your edification, Annette, Mr. Jenick went a whole year and the Senate didn't schedule his confirmation hearing. And for Bob. And so we're kind of at the will and pleasure of the Senate Confirmation Committee. If they don't schedule it, there's not much we can do. And that also complies back with the other parts in our bylaws when we speak to duly appointed. Not duly appointed and confirmed, we talk about duly appointed. Resolutions are to be signed by the chair or the secretary in his absence under resolutions. Section 2 under committees, we have removed the ex officio members because the only ex officio member that was allowed was the state CIO, who in the bill last year was changed to not an ex officio member but a fully voting member, and those are the proposed amended bylaws changes.
So at this point, I guess I would accept a motion to accept the bylaws as amended by Mr. Rippey.
So moved.
Is that me? Do I have a second? Thank you. Any discussion?
Did you get both those, Kathy? Ms. Quintana?
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. We have new bylaws. Anything else, Mr. Rippey?
Thanks.
Right. Anything else?
No, not on that. And in fact, I don't. Sure, I won't remain totally quiet. But
oh, we're sure of that.
Then I think we're ready for the general manager's report.
I'll just squeeze in here at the corner.
Why don't you just go there? And you can take mine.
Well, we'll no, you could. That's fine. I can do it from here. I feel kind of compelled to depart from my script for a second to reinforce some of the comments Greg made in response to board member questions related to marketing and also to the I'm sorry.
Put the mic up so we can hear you.
For eternity's sake.
For eternity's sake, okay. So I'm departing from my script just for a second because I'd like to reinforce what Greg said in response to some earlier questions. We are obligated in our contract to do marketing, and that's a good thing because it definitely serves the portal's best interest that we do marketing because, as someone said, it's not true that if we build it, they will come. We have a lot of focus, and primarily our focus has been targeted marketing of specific applications, which we do in concert with the agency sponsor of the specific application. And I can give you some examples. In fact, you have a great example in front of you in this flyer, which is a full-color, two-sided flyer that we designed, co-designed with the Department of Revenue. And this flyer is in the hands of all of the registered tax preparers in the state of Colorado. They keep it in their office so that they can then give it to their clients about the online tax payment services. There were also notices sent out in something like 700,000 tax booklets about the URL for the tax payment website. So it's hard to imagine how we could do a better job of infiltrating our message to the specific potential users of that particular application than by partnering with the revenue department. And we actually cost-shared that in the sense that we did all the printing and design of this flyer, and we printed hundreds of thousands of them, gave them to the department, and then they distributed them in their already planned mailing. So it's a great partnership, not only in the building of the software, but in the marketing of the service as well. And that model carries forward also in the online motor vehicle tag renewal service, which if you look in my report on page 3, and I think I showed this to you in a previous meeting, but this is our Vroom flyer. This little flyer also went in the 700,000 tax booklets. So we cross-selling the car tag renewal service in the tax payment booklets so that we're hitting those car tag owners. That is in turn reinforced by the fact that each county, when they mail out the card that notifies you that your tag is due for renewal, if you look in the box in the upper right-hand corner in red ink, it says you may renew this tag online at the following URL. That's how we're getting 16,000 car tag renewals a month, and that's with only 15 counties out of the 64 participating. So we're very deliberate about our marketing, but it's highly targeted marketing.
Senator May.
About the rest of those counties, are we trying to group them together, or how are we going to get them involved?
We're working really closely with the Department of Revenue on a strategy for bringing those smaller counties online,
we are hesitating to go full bore on that right at the moment because we need to make sure that the back-end systems are easier to use for the smaller counties that don't have dedicated IT staffs. Right now, we've brought the bigger counties on first because most of those counties have IT folks on board that can actually work with our people to get the file exchanges to work the way they need to work. And so we're in a temporary hiatus, I guess I would say, for a couple of months while we do some reengineering of our back-end system to get the smaller counties on board. And Becky Davis, of course, is our partner in that effort. And we have a deliberate plan, but it's just going a little slower than we thought.
Thank you.
Since you're back, I'm glad you're back because I was going to answer your question about how we determine what the potential loads of the applications are going to be, and that feeds into marketing, which I was just talking about.
Greg mentioned that we score every application on a subjective scale, which gives us kind of a litmus test of whether the agency is ready, willing, and able to do this application, to what extent it's going to affect the public, and to what extent we might expect those services to affect our infrastructure. Well, the first blush is really kind of a gut feel of how many users there might be for this app. And you're very perceptive in suggesting that we might look at the other 20 portals that may have similar services to see what their experience has been. And we do that very routinely. I'm very interactive with my colleagues in the other states, and when we think we may be, I'm searching for an example, there's a county-related application for car tags, for example. We went out to the other 11 or 12 portals that also offer car tag renewals and talked about their services with them and what their experience had been with marketing and with demand for the service. But where the rubber really starts to meet the road is when we have got a spec. That is to say, we know what this application is going to look like, we understand how it's going to work, we've had intimate dialogue with the agencies about who the specific users are. For example, on a county-by-county basis, how many registered vehicles there are in that county, then we have a very good way of getting a handle on what we might expect the demand for the service to be. And we sit down with Mark Church, our technical director, and we architect that system in such a way that even if we double or triple the projected demand, it would not impact our systems. That metric of working with the partner to anticipate what the potential user base is really does two things. Make sure that we have the technical infrastructure to support it, and it also gives us a really good feel for what the marketing effort needs to be. So that exercise serves two purposes, technical and promotional for the portal. I don't think you were in the room where I talked about the target marketing that we do for the portal. But so those two things I wanted to mention. In terms of branding, the redesign of the portal, which of course we're going to show you before we go live, has been an ongoing effort for the last 6 or 8 months. We're developing it in Fatwire because we feel passionate that if we're going to be promoting Fatwire as the solution for all state agencies, by golly, the state website ought to be hosted and developed in Fatwire as the showcase website. So that migration of the state website from what it was the day we inherited the job to what it's going to be in its next generation, which will incorporate some of Kathalia Robinette's metrics and Web 2.0 features, is something that you're going to see in a very soon-to-be-held board meeting. I can't promise it for next month, but I'm not promising it for next month. So
you would have killed me if I said that.
Well, I don't think I let the record show that I did not make a promise. So that's could I invite any questions about any of those comments?
Better than me.
Dan, what do you have coming online that's going to bring revenue?
Could you repeat the question, please?
What do you have that's coming online you're working on that's going to bring in revenue?
You mean the things that I haven't put in this report?
No. Something that continues to bring revenue to our whole operation to pay for all that we're doing and hiring of our people and all that stuff.
We have a lot of revenue-generating applications that are either in the report and many that are in discussion that are not solid enough yet for me to put in the report. You're putting me on the spot, Senator, and I've got to go to my cheat sheet.
Let me give you an example, Senator, while he's looking at it, and it may not even be quite in his cheat sheet there, but that.
Aaron, you want to address that question?
I'd love to.
Would you come on up and take a seat?
With your permission, Mr. Chairman.
I know what you're looking at. Almost turned around. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the next month, we anticipate a number of applications coming online, but every one of them that you see on this within the report on the Gantt chart that say PE before them are payment engine integrations. And it would be actually on page 8. And a payment engine integration can take a number of different forms, but in its purest sense, it is an integration of our checkout utility and payment engine with an existing service that's already out there. And what that allows us to do is to automate the payment of a service or a function of state government, of an agency or an office, and there's a transaction or a portal administration fee associated with the transaction of that payment. For example, one of the top ones on that you see is a agriculture payment portal. It's it will allow the Department of Agriculture to take payment for a large number of different items that they provide, license types, just a lot of things that they provide at their cage where they're not currently accepting credit cards. It will allow them as a point of sale device to capture a credit card or an electronic check and make payment for that. And each one of those transactions generates a portal administration fee.
Yes. Senator May.
And does that integrate with COFRS on all of those?
Yes, sir.
So the department, in essence, gets credit for whatever's in the statute that they're entitled to?
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Okay. Mr. Morris.
Do you mind if I have you translate a little bit that to English for me?
Yes, sir.
And maybe you also on your chart here have something called type. And under the column type, you have a dollar sign or free.
Yes, sir.
How does the information under the column type relate to whatever PE means?
Each one of the ones that you would see PE next to, assuming I crafted this correctly, should have a dollar sign next to it, which means that there is a revenue component associated with that integration. So there are other. What it means is there will be a portal administration fee associated with it or a time and materials fee associated with whatever that application that's listed next to it is. And free means it is at no cost to the agency or the citizen that would be benefiting from the
okay.
service.
So in answer to Senator May's question, which is what you got going that's going to make money, is the answer everything with a dollar sign?
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Oh, okay. So
boy, that was an easy answer. I should have thought of that one.
Okay.
Do you have any estimates as you have these revenue generating applications regarding what the financial impact will be? Do you do forecasts on those?
Absolutely.
And where are they? Or, I mean, how does the board get do you give the board information on that?
Not typically. It's developed in conjunction with the agency. It's a part of the, marketing drives the adoption of the apps. The number of users drives the number of fees we collect. So there's a certain amount of crystal ball nature in that. So it's not an exact science by any means. We do an annual business plan, which has our best guess of what our annual revenues are going to be. On an application by application basis, a service by service basis, we kind of a tango with the agency to determine what the reasonable fees are and what the market will bear, if you will, for that particular service. But the board's never asked for a service by service forecast of fees because those fees essentially are CI's revenue stream. I don't know if that's a clear answer or not.
Anne, you want to continue?
Sure. So going back to page one, and I'll make this brief since we've probably used up my available time. In February, as I think is already...
I really hate to do this.
No, please.
I'm processing what you just said. And
okay.
All are.
I just had kind of all of a sudden a light bulb went off. I apologize.
No worries.
Let me go back. Kind of reflect. The senator asked, what's coming online that generates fees? And I understood the question to mean, what's coming on that generates fees that allow... us, I assume that means SIPA, to provide free services to folks or to provide services that cost or that don't make money. Then you said as you closed that the reason that you've really never presented any information about these is because I think the phrase you used was what I heard was this is your revenue that is generated by what's under type. Did I hear that right?
Well,
essentially what revenue is generated here under type with the dollar sign is your revenue, not SIPA's or the state's.
The ones that have the dollar sign typically have two components. There's a state statutory fee component, and then there's a portal administration fee component that helps pay for the cost of collecting that revenue. So at the point of collection, the state's money or the county's money, for that matter, go to the state or county, and the portal administration fee component goes to the portal. That helps pay for the credit card fees, the banking fees, and some revenue to support the portal's operation.
Okay, if we confine ourselves to the latter set of numbers, the revenue to the portal, or the way you put it, I think.
Yeah.
Then if we choose to go a direction as a board that on a service that would be a non-revenue generating service, would that then be paid for out of your revenues, or would
yes.
it be paid for out of the surplus we have? Or
that is the self-funded model. You just described it. The revenues that the portal takes in underwrite the cost of all of the free services that we may choose to provide.
Dr. Feingold.
Just to make sure I heard that right, the revenue that comes in comes to CI, and then there's a portion every month, which is a fixed portion plus a percentage, that comes to SIPA. So where does the money come from to support new free services? Does it come from the SIPA bucket or from the CI bucket?
Great question. It comes from the retained earnings of the portal. It comes
of SIPA.
No, of CI. The funds to support the development of all the services of the portal, free or fee, come from CI's financial resources, not from SIPA's.
Greg, I think it's probably time to weigh in a little bit and talk about how this whole concept came about.
Sure, and I think a couple places where we get a little bit confused, and Bob just spelled it out perfectly, where the authority gets their money from. And that was the agreement that was made by contract when we went into business with CI. But one of your questions and how you put it was, okay, if this board decided we wanted this application, and say for sake of discussion that you envision some application that costs $10 million and he says, we'd like you to build it. Well, there would be some discussion going back and forth. But if you came up with one that was reasonable within, and if you look at what is at the core of our self-funded model, is we will build applications as resources allow. And that's a very key phraseology that's in there from the very beginning, and that's key to the self-funded model, that we're not, even though as an authority, and I don't want to make this any more confusing than it is, we're allowed to issue bonds, but as resources allow, that's what drives the development of new applications. The expectation that we have with CI is, and Dan and I have this back and forth all the time, okay, how's it going? Why don't you have more developers? Why don't you have more project managers? He brought on two project managers last year. When we look at what the original business plan was, and a year ago we would have been at 14 CI employees. That was the product that we bought. That's what our expectation was. We're at 20 because we had this revenue stream that was going very well. CI was reinvesting it on applications that agencies were requesting, that the governor's office was requesting, and that's kind of how that whole dynamic works. And it's a negotiation and a give and take all the time back and forth. Dan and I had a great conversation yesterday about looking out a little further on how that might change a little bit and what we might be looking at doing and changing that a little bit. But it's a unique model, this self-funded model within state government. And as an authority, and you can cover your ears on this one, I've had the discussion with our state CIO, Mike Lokaitis. We have the authority to do this and this model. We may want to go out there and utilize that authority on something differently than just the portal. We have that authority to do it in some other places. For instance, if we were talking about in this consolidation shared services and trying to figure out how we were going to pay for shared services across the consolidation, SIPA might be the vehicle that really makes sense because of its statutory authority to be able to do that, and it wouldn't be anything about the portal. The portal and the contract that we have in this self-funded model is with CI. Doesn't mean we couldn't have a different contract out there for a little different viewpoint using that same self-funded model.
And I'm looking for the first sheet you handed us that had
budget.
Yeah, the very first sheet. Just a question. So therefore, is the number that you list for net income that accumulates every month based on...
Are you talking net? Okay, net. Yes, yeah. Go ahead.
That's SIPA money.
That's SIPA money.
That's above and beyond whatever you said was the retained earnings.
Yes.
That
and so so therefore, in spending the SIPA money, whatever that balance is. So let me ask it differently. So Senator, when you were asking the question, making sure that there are projects bringing revenues in order for us to be allowed to do projects that don't bring revenue in, were you thinking of both the SIPA money and the retained earnings money, or were you thinking of only the retained earnings money?
Senator May.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm thinking of both. And the reason I say that is this. When we originally set up this model and we analyzed what products were going to be delivered to the public, there were only a certain few of those numbers that were going to be able to support themselves. Because there are products that are delivered to the public by the state right now that don't have enough volume, shall we say, to generate any revenue. So we knew when we did this that some of this stuff was going to have to be developed for free and delivered for free. So therefore, the other people who actually pay for service, fee for service, are in essence carrying the load for those that don't. And I think we've got somewhere in our business plan or whatever that was an 80-20. At least that's the target. I don't know that that's necessarily something we have to live with, but the target was 80-20, that 80% of what we deliver out there would be, in essence, free of the public. Now, that doesn't mean it didn't cost something to build the system that delivers it.
I appreciate that.
And I think there's another piece to this that we need to recall as we built this model to begin with, the self-funded model. And I think the online registration program is a good example where this was a great service provided to the citizens, but the revenue department spent $0 in developing the software and technology for that. And kind of the vision for the portal itself was that we would hire somebody, in this case CI, to come in and do that development free of charge, and then they would get the small incremental amounts to help offset that investment dollars for those even that bring in revenue. So there's not only a benefit, in my opinion, to those non-revenue producing entities, but the revenue producing entities probably wouldn't have had the resources and the dollars to develop those programs in the first place had we not developed this model to begin with.
And one more very important piece of that is the capital investment that was made on the front end. And Dan could give us that number of dollars that we never expended a penny for servers. And that was the number that I was telling you before that we had estimated at one time, $450,000. We didn't put out a thing for that. And they've got their payback model on it. And that's all part of the... self-funded model as it operates.
Ms. Quintana?
Yes, I had a question. As part of the business plan that CA provides to the SIPA board to review, is there a budget for their work included in there that may be subject to the approval of the board? Is that or isn't that part of our process?
No. And when you say their annual budget amount?
Right. How much... If they're growing headcount, for example, from 14 to 20, and is that something that's within the scope of the SIPA board to have some review?
The review is on the total plan, whether their projected revenues and expenses. We accept the entire plan in its entirety.
Without details on the budget included? Their budget.
Yeah, I think they're just okay. We may have something like this is the personnel item. We don't break it down to how much do you pay this developer, how much do you pay that one. We talk about resources, but we don't talk about it in the minutia, which is really a private company's proprietary information.
I just typically, when I've seen joint ventures, the whole financial operating model is open to the view of the joint venture for both parties, and that's why I was asking the question about it. So,
and you know, that's an interesting point, but I wouldn't term this as a joint venture because we brought nothing to the table other than access. So when I look at a joint venture,
which is significant,
well, I'm saying in dollars, we brought no dollars.
Dan, did you ever?
If I might comment on that, the Department of Revenue makes available data that is repackaged and sold. Without that data and without the ability to repackage that, there is no revenue.
Not on that,
so we
I
brought
agree with
a
you,
lot
but,
to the table.
But they are compensated the exact amount that they were previously when they were doing, and they're limited statutorily to what they can get, and they still get the same amount that they got the day before we signed the contract. So they get compensated by it. It's for round figures, $100,000 a year, and they can't charge more than that by statute. And in fact, the monies that they receive don't go back to the Department of Revenue Operating Fund. They have to go to HUTF, of all things.
Dan, did you want to respond?
I just was going to offer some clarifying comments. It's the spirit of a partnership, and I'm not a lawyer, so I can't argue what a joint venture is versus a partnership. It's That's not a partnership sense. Or a joint venture. It's a collaboration more than anything, and NIC did bring the money to the table and made the initial investments, and now we're all benefiting from the partnership and effect that we have together. The business plan that I give to SIPA each year does have a thumbnail forecast of revenues, CI revenues, and a reasonable breakout of expenses so that you'll know in order of magnitude what our revenues and expenses are. And that's because you need to know that order of magnitude. And every month at this meeting, I give you a very detailed breakout of revenues, expenses, and you see our balance sheet. And you see a breakout of each service and what the revenue contribution of those services are. And I'll be handing that out to you here momentarily. So there is a lot of transparency in our numbers with the limitation that we're a private entity, and if we can do the job for the state of Colorado with 15 people versus 25 people, then why would you care if we were doing it with 15 versus 25? So there's a certain amount of operational detail that, frankly, we just don't trouble you with because it's my job to manage that enterprise on behalf of our parent company and to the benefit of the state of Colorado within the policy constraints that the board sets.
Senator May.
When we crafted this bill, we were very careful to not conflict in any way with the statutes that set up within each department the fee that was received by the state or that department, in essence, for providing that service. So, for instance, the SIPA operates on fee for service. So the first thing that gets paid is whatever's in the statute. And that's a fixed amount which can be changed by the legislature whenever they feel like it or whatever. Now, we were very careful not to take away from those departments any capability to deliver that product the way they were currently delivering it, manually, on the telephone, whatever, however it was going to be. So therefore, the whole thing operates on a fee for service, which the user makes the decision whether or not they are willing to pay that extra fee to use our SIPA. And a prime example of that, of course, is the re-registration of your vehicle, which is $1.37. I've done it 3 times. And the convenience of that is worth the $1.37 to me. Yet still, by statute, the county clerk, the Department of Revenue, whoever else was supposed to get a piece of that action still gets it. In fact, some of it goes to the old age pension fund off the top, as I remember. Is that right, Senator Cadman?
I can't remember. I'm getting old.
So we're operating this whole thing on fee-for-service, and it's just like whether or not you're willing to pay for a product when you walk in the store. You know, and if it's too high, they're going to go back and do it the way they were before. So we can't go out of sight with what we charge for a fee for service, or we won't get any business.
Any further discussion on this issue? Dan, you want to continue? Oh, I'm sorry. Westfall?
I'll set forth the formula for the distribution of money. I've actually negotiated between the board, DI, and not only do I assist Greg on a regular basis, but it's specifically
or something.
Dan, continue.
Thank you very much. I'm going to defer the other comments that I had, except to say that in February we had a very busy infrastructure month. We're trying to get ready for tax season, which is coming up very quickly in April. We're also in the process, and this is very important for the board to understand, we're launching and we're requiring the major vendors of driver license histories, which is our baseline funding source through the Department of Revenue, to use our interactive or point-to-point service, which is a service that's hosted by us on the via the DOR mainframe. This is a point of history that you may not remember, or may not, if you're a new board member, may not have ever known. The larger DMV vendors, ChoicePoint and Samba and some of the others, have historically had a full copy of the state of Colorado's driver license history database on their own servers. And they've been running these services out of their servers and selling the driver records to the insurance industry. That was done historically as a matter of necessity because the department couldn't support real-time interactive access to those databases. One of the first priorities that the portal had when we came to this job 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, was to create that interactive service. Yes. Okay. Thanks, Becky. The reason that we're incentivized to move that back to an interactive service is that places the personal information of almost of every Colorado driver in the hands of a private sector entity, and there's four or five of them. So we're really focused on pulling that back and requiring them to go interactive to a highly secured site that we're running for the DOR right now. So that's another reason we focus on infrastructure in February, because effective March 1, we required them to all be interactive, and that's a process we're going through right now.
Mr. Glassman? And you're making that change because otherwise you'd transfer that data and they would house it and store it somewhere, and
yes, sir.
Not as secure as you guys doing it.
That's exactly right.
Oh, thank you.
We have launched a service that's called Contact Compass. It was brought up earlier today. I'm going to, after I share with you our budget numbers for the month of January, ask Joel Wilhoit of our staff to give you a quick, I almost forgot, didn't I? She's just gotten married, and I haven't memorized her last name yet. Sorry, Joel.
You did very well.
Wilhoit. To give us a quick 10-minute demo of the Contact Compass system. But in the meantime, I will share the budget numbers with
before
you.
Before he does that, can I?
Mr. Glassman?
Please.
Actually, before you do that, as you hand that out, you know, my favorite page is always page 8.
The Gantt chart.
The Gantt chart, yeah. And it is, you really do a good job. I always track back a few months and find out, you know, last June and July you said you'd be launching something in February and March. And you hit those pretty well. And so thank you for having, you know, the foresight. Now, it appears that if you hit it again at the end of this month, you are going to, as Aaron alluded to, you're going to be launching about 7 new sites, I think 4 or 5 of which are revenue-generating, which is pretty cool. So one of my questions is, we always get great interaction with Department of Human Services, with revenue, with labor. Do you see any on here that are departments that we have not traditionally done business with, or how do we as a board help to maybe open up a new department and make some new friends?
Great question. We have one that's not on the list yet. I don't think we put our Department of Education project on it.
Yeah,
is it on here? That's a great example of one that's brand new.
29.
No? Yeah, educator licensing. Colorado Department of Education wants the, do we ever figure out exactly how many licensed teachers there are?
There are 45,000 licensed teachers, which adds up to, based on the number of different certificates each teacher may have, is 40,000 per year.
So they needed a way to take payments online, and that's easy for us because we're experts at taking payments online. So that's why this one is labeled PE, Payment Engine. We make, just for the board's information, we get to retain 75 cents of every payment engine transaction. So we make our revenue in 75 cent increments, typically. But the cool thing about this one is the rest of the story is that they also want us to enable all of those teachers to renew their applications online. They want to enable the new teachers to completely submit all of the paperwork required to become a certified teacher in the state of Colorado. And this payment engine application is essentially going to underwrite the cost of our developing that very highly business rules driven interactive service for teachers that come to Colorado and want to get online with and want to become certified teachers in the state. So that's a great example.
Does that include renewals?
Maybe includes renewals is the first step, and then the new teachers is the second step.
Maybe for our new members, it's important to understand that in the payment engine, although your portion is 75%, the charge may be different because there are bank charges in addition to that. So
that's right.
The charge is going to vary more than the 75 cents, but it will include whatever the bank. And as you know, with credit cards, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, they're all different.
Or if they do an e-check at the buck.
E-check, that's right, yep. Don?
I just wanted to comment that I've spoken with Mike Lokaitis about having the SIPA board members who are executive directors make a presentation to the entire cabinet at one of our upcoming cabinet meetings about SIPA and all of the opportunities that exist and start getting folks thinking about where we may be able to branch out beyond the usual suspects. So we're excited about that.
Dan, did you want to have Aaron add some comments?
In addition to the agencies that were mentioned originally by Mr. Glassman, I just wanted to mention that on this page 8, some other agencies and offices that are also represented by these projects include Department of Regulatory Agencies, Agriculture, the Office of Economic Development, International Trade, Public Health and Environment, DOLA, Department of Public Safety, Department of, DPA, CBI, Jefferson County, Healthcare Policy and Finance. So, and that's just, I'm not sure if I hit every one of them, but I just...
Homeland Security,
absolutely. That's on page 8. I hadn't looked at page 9 yet, but it may include some others. So mm-hmm. we are becoming engaged with new agencies like the Department of Education, but continuing relationships that we had built previously with others.
Mr. Glassman.
So have those always been on this chart and I overlooked them, or are we having a new kind of rash of activity outside of, you know, kind of our core?
I'm not sure these are represented in the names of each of these applications, but if you will refer to the appendix, this exact same list is referenced in this report on page...
The green charts?
Yes, sir, the green charts.
15.
Thank you. 15, and there's a little bit more
thank you.
Expanded information.
Senator May?
I'd like to make a point, too, that we have like 19 departments, formal departments, plus selected officials and so forth, and many of those had in place, and still do, contracts to do a certain delivery a certain way, and those contracts are still in effect. So you can't just walk away from a contract. So the department, OIT, SIPA, you have to work with them and do it in a business-like manner on how you end up getting that into the portal. And one of our big problems, of course, is cybersecurity. And when we originally did this thing, we found we had like 2,400 entities that had their own direct access to the Internet. Big cybersecurity possibility of a problem. So gradually, as we get this in through SIPA and we get it through our internet portal, we'll be closing that down, and we'll have a lot better cybersecurity in the future.
Thank you.
Andy, you want to
continue with the budget? Sure. Those of you that have seen this page before, it's very, very familiar to you. What I'm showing you is the last 2 months of 07 and the month of January, which is the most recent month for which we have financials. What you look for is stability in revenues, which we actually had a very strong January, primarily due to driver records. I'm not sure why we saw a blip in driver records in January, but we sure liked it. And it fed through to the SIPA revenue share number
in December.
Well, we paid for it out of the low usage we had in December, I think. And you also look for stability in expenses. We've got a very stable expense profile. So the health of the portal on a month-to-month basis is good. And, again, the bottom block shows you for this particular month, which is the month of January, where our revenues came from. And that list of apps is growing month-to-month. Significantly, our driver license renewal app, we saw a blustering 145 driver renewals in the month of February, and we're scheming to get that number up, Becky and I and the staff. And we also saw 1,900 tax filings in the month of February, 800 in the month of January, 1,900 in February, and I have every reason to think that as we get closer to April, that number is going to get very large, which is why we're bolstering up that infrastructure doing the load testing. And any questions? I'll be glad to take.
Dan, are you guys doing any interface with doing some online stuff with commercial driver's license and the tests that those people take?
Not to date, Senator. Have not.
Okay, I think that's an opportunity at some point that might be fairly easy to do.
I'll have to defer to my friends at the Department of Revenue about that. We've got a long list of great opportunities there.
Mr. Glassman?
I want to go back for a minute, Greg, to a statement I think that you made a minute ago. And I know this is confidential, so should I not use specific numbers with an audience?
That would make me more comfortable.
Okay. I think, Greg, I heard you say that on the motor vehicle records, right, that are bought and repackaged and sold, right? I thought I heard you say that the annual the revenue for that was $100,000.
To the Department of Revenue, to SIPA. That's what they pay the Department of Revenue, and those are at least two-year-old numbers, so don't hold me to them.
Okay.
But
nice.
That's,
want to make sure I got the net.
That's what they're paying the Department of Revenue for the access to those records, because by statute.
Okay, and that's not where I'm going. I got it. Thank you. But what I do want to get to is if you look at the total amount of revenue that is non-DMV, it's only about a couple percentage points of our total budget, right? Which is probably why Senator May keeps saying that his priority is revenue-generating apps.
Got it. I just want to make
sure that I got the circle back around here. So out of this total amount of money, you're paying some amount of money back to revenue. Or is that out of the operating expenses that's up in the income statement?
It's in the cost of revenues line.
In the cost of revenues. Yeah. Got it. I am not a CPA, clearly, and I appreciate that.
Senator May.
When we started the portal, folks, we had to do a little cherry picking, strawberry picking, whatever you want to say. We got great cooperation out of the Department of Revenue, and we would not be where we are now and could not have done this whole thing had we not had that revenue stream.
Agreed.
It had carried us. And it's getting better, and I can remember when that was the only line, and then there was one or two, and then we've screamed about it, and looky, we're growing. I mean, $11, I expect that to grow.
Talk about old school, huh?
Mr. Rippey.
Thank you, Mr.
Good
Chairman. And Kent, that's an excellent point, and I think as you look at the maturation of what we've seen happen in other NIC portals, and Dan can speak to Hawaii, where in Hawaii now, those are a minority of the revenues that support the portal in the state of Hawaii. And that's certainly our goal, is to spread our risk of revenue as broadly as we can.
Dan, anything further? Oh, we're going to see a presentation.
I'd like to introduce Jill for a 10-minute demo of the Contact Compass application. Jill, you'll have to tell me how you want me to do this, Jill. Shall I sit here?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Sorry.
Of course. I'm a Southern gentleman. Would you like to sit or stand?
I'll just stand.
Okay. All right.
I'm trying.
Revenue was giving those records away. Oh, it's pathetic.
They must know how I'd
had that not been the situation way back many years ago.
Do we need to do a toggle here to make that go through there?
Yeah, champion knows how to do it.
You've been the most patient man I've known.
Well, you guys have never seen me as quiet.
If he doesn't
have Greg has indicated that he needs to depart. We want to say thank you once again to you, Greg.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Likewise. You've never seen me this quiet, have you?
It doesn't
yes.
become you.
And our concert revenues is 90. I'll take care of it. Just
yeah. Yeah, get out here.
Don't touch anything. Look at all our revenue sources.
Oh, yeah.
Why are we at 300 here? 642 there.
These are transactions, not revenue.
Oh, that is the revenue side.
Historical perspective.
Yeah. Thank you. Interesting. Thank you.
I got it.
We
renegotiated
the
relationship. Yes.
I guess I'm going to get
the inception data.
Our revenue,
right.
And then we split it
up.
My view is.
It's not exactly a split, is it?
Really long.
All right, Contact Compass application. Is anybody, I'll give a little bit of a brief definition of what Contact Compass application is.
You guys okay with that?
Essentially, we worked with the Department of Personnel and Administration, and we also worked with the state operators. And what we did was we took a PDF, a non-searchable PDF, of the state organizational directory, combined it with the information the state operators were gathering, which were keywords and whatnot, put those together, and we were able to put together the Contact Compass application. So what you do is you go to the Contact Compass application, and you type in a word such as
driver
license.
Obviously, I'm not a typist, okay?
Press search. And what this does, oh, and I do want to clarify, this is a demo. This is not live. We didn't want to risk having a live environment going on here. So this information, well, in terms of internet, we didn't know if it would be up and running. This information is relevant to the keyword that the person puts in. So what we've done is you put in driver license, it will come up with a list of related departments, divisions, or offices. And then you can click on any of those to get further information. So if you want to click on one of those, we can...
Any one of them?
Any one of them. And here you see that it brings up a whole new page of information. Things like their email could be included, their fax number could be included, phone number. The main contact is always in this initial frame here. And then you have any other contacts that have been put in. What this application is a living and breathing application. So the state operators access an administration piece that we have also built. They can update this in real time as they get a call, and in 10 minutes, this will be available for the public to use. The state operators and the public now can use this service. Yeah.
Where is it going to be accessed on the Colorado.gov?
Well, currently it's the first link under online services on the homepage, Contact Compass. And it'll also be available on DPA's site in various places. We've already organized with them where they would like to. this wasn't on the homepage last month because we were still updating the keywords, and we wanted to make sure that we were comfortable, well, we being the department was comfortable enough with what they already had before we brought it out to the public, because they're going to be searching and using it. We wanted to make sure there was enough information for the people to access. And throughout the past couple months, we've been working with the state operators, and they've also, DPA has also hired a temporary associate to work with the departments, with all the departments within the state, to start collecting more keywords so it's even better for the public and the state operators. Go ahead.
You know, a lot of web pages have a consistently appearing line that says search. No matter where you are in it, you can always search, whether it's a university or a vendor or whatever. Mm-hmm. Are you looking to put this on every page, you know, make it be a consistent line for anybody, so even though you're maybe looking at DPA or my website at Labor, you'd be able to go and click on a search?
Well, the thing with this app, I mean, that's actually a good idea, and we can look into that, but the thing with this application, it's statewide, so it's every department, every division, every office. If we go ahead.
Have that. It's the Google search box that is on every page of the state website that we provide that service. This is a more specific service that's essentially a tool for the telephone operators to use. They assist callers, and it also allows those callers to get something that's very specific, which might not even have a keyword in it. In other words, the text information about that state function that appears on the state website might not be as readily or as thoroughly indexed by the Google search engine as it is by the
And the main difference between Google and this is that this specifically finds the contact information, whereas Google will pull up web pages, it'll pull up PDFs, it'll pull up... This brings up phone numbers, email addresses, websites, so that people can contact the state more effectively and efficiently, more with using keywords. This was actually... The information was available prior to this application as a PDF. So now we've taken this PDF and we've made it a searchable application with keywords. Sorry. What are you trying to do?
Just make
it full screen. I wanted to maximize the screen so we could see that it's the Colorado.
I think what Don may be asking, and Bob Feingold just whispered in my ear, are you asking whether or not we could put another search box up here somewhere, so that if this was not the destination they were looking for, that they could actually execute another search from within the application?
As opposed to rolling back to the beginning.
Yeah. No, that's not exactly what I was asking. I was asking more what you responded to, which is we may have the Google line that appears on every page, but this seems like it would be a great additional line to have on every page, because this has contact information, among other things, that might be pretty useful.
That actually is the key point. This delivers you directly to the very person that you need to either call on the phone or send an email to that can help answer your detail. Google won't get that specific.
Yeah.
You know, Google may give you 10,000 hits, and you may click on 100 of them and still never find the right person to call.
Yeah.
Allow users to toggle between Google and Contact Compass in a search criteria on the homepage. I just got that.
It's an idea.
It's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. You know, worthy of some, I suppose, cussing and discussing.
Well, I'll have to editorialize on Jill's behalf. She's been working on this for a year, and the Department of the DPA has been a key partner in this, but it's been a very painful process of weaning the operators off of the PDF, which they all had printed out and handwritten as their Bible to help these callers, and we've had to wean them off of the PDF and into the database. The cool thing about this is that with a click of a mouse, you can generate a new PDF with the updated information, and not rely on.
And they will.
And they will. And second, the public, for that matter.
Right, available still on the home site, on the homepage. And this PDF is updated nightly, so it's a lot more. It's going to be a lot more effective than what they had previously, which was every couple of months they would put updates in there. So now it's more real time.
Any questions for Jill?
I'm theorizing that if Mike Lokaitis were here, I know part of the consolidation is they're looking at the number of help desks across the state, and there's, they haven't counted them all yet, 20, 30, 40 of them, right? So is this tool applicable for whether you're at a help desk in Pueblo for CDHS or down the street with Becky and DOR?
Go ahead, Jill.
I was just gonna. You're just asking, can anybody use it, and it would be useful, essentially, right? You're asking.
Yes, and it's got the breadth for any department anywhere.
Yes, this is the state organizational directory in a searchable form. We took what they originally had as a PDF, and we've combined keyword database with that state organizational directory. So we are getting updates from every department, every division about that contact information. Not we being CI, but we being DPA. DPA is constantly getting information, and they're constantly updating. And then the state operators are also putting in keywords that they're getting from the calls that they're receiving.
So it's
kind of an all-encompassing application for the state.
So Denver right now, and Mike Loketis put in a 311, right, system where you dial 311 and you can ask anything, even to another government entity, the whole bit. I think that this convergence through the Senate bill and the other technology they're putting in, that's what they ultimately want to see. I don't really have a question about that, but I think that we all want to keep this in mind as an evolving tool, because we will have 311 or N11 in a year or two at the state, I believe.
And the goal for this is that eventually each department will have their own login so they can manage their own department information and the keywords and whatnot. Right now, it's only the state operators because we wanted them to become comfortable with it first, build the database up a little bit more, but we do have the ability to add more users. So if DOR would like to manage their own portion of this, they can. If DOLA would like to, they could do also. So it's something that will evolve over time. It's just a matter of getting that comfort level up to par.
Right. Thank you. I know, Aaron, did you?
That is better than
I thought. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it, everybody. If there are no more questions, my report is concluded.
Mr. Rippey, Steps, Labs, contract.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We discussed this item last month. I have forwarded to all of you a memo that I hope answered some of the questions that were asked last month. Mr. Loketis, who is at his mother-in-law's funeral back in the Dakotas, had called me and said that he desired to be a part of this discussion, and would it be possible to table this action item until next month. The expiration of the contract is March 16th. I talked with Richard on whether it would be okay to extend on a month basis. SysTest is amenable to that, so we can continue testing until we have the discussion next month. And my recommendation to the board at this point would be to table for 1 month.
Is there any discussion? Did I miss somebody? Oh, you?
I think instead of tabling, I think it should be because technically under the terms of the contract it expires on March 16th, authorize approval to extend the mutually agreed test for 1 month, and then it can be taken.
I think I would agree with that, but I think for now, so we're not putting ourselves in a bind getting a quorum to reauthorize a contract, I would say grant a six-month opportunity so that we can not feel like we're in a box should we run into a shortage of members at a future meeting.
Do we have a quorum?
We have a quorum now. We don't always have a quorum.
Mr. Chairman.
Jack, I'm sorry.
I wonder if I might amend that. Can't we just grant going month to month until we have an opportunity to revisit the contract?
Yeah.
I think that's the correct way to do it.
Like that motion, Jack.
Yeah. That's the motion you should make.
All other
motions have been retracted, rescinded, and revoked. Jack Arrowsmith, how about a motion?
A motion to approve the contract with SysTest to go month to month until this board has an opportunity to revisit the contract.
And not exceeding $100 a month. Great.
The SysTest guys just left.
No CPR. Is there a second? Did you second
yes.
it? Is there further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. That's unanimous. Is there anything else that anybody would like to bring to the table since we're here? That we are concluded and adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a great picture of Mr. Rippey in Governing Magazine that talks about the portal. Looks like he had a sunburn.
Yeah.
Or cheap candles.
Did Kathy take that of you?
You know, actually, my brother did.
Oh, really? Oh, so that just came out. This is like brand
new. It's brand new. Brand new.
Good. I'll get that in the mail. Yeah, the sun's burning bright.
I wasn't trying to get into a discussion of what constitutes.
What does it say? What is the public in the world? Yeah, government.
That's irrelevant. But you're right. The state came to the table with that. I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Except this new school consolidation bill. It's interesting.
The governor
I tried that back in the last year.
We have what we have.
Either was smart.
No, your good position to ask smart questions because they think, you know, because you don't know the answer. It's still on.
Voter. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen him walk into a room.
Has a different vision.
Money jump out of people's pockets.
Yes. It's not.
Yeah, it's not.
What a guy!
We're good on the other thing, too. And my compliments on the bylaws, because ordinarily I'd want to see that in advance, but you made it painless. Thank you.
That's the email I wrote back to.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's sent or not. I am
5'11.
Where
are you going? His mother was tall.
We're still working in that direction. We have 40 cells.
I think it's a great idea for you to do that. But in the week after that,
my brother's 6'4".
So, all right.
I would be good tomorrow.
Maybe I can
And it just, it's days old.
I think it's
might be valuable to you.
Yeah.
Because we're having some
discussions.
I know Dan would love to get a chance to have you down at CI's office to see what they do.
$100 a month comment was not funny at all. That was not funny. Westfall, you're off the clock. Get these down to an hour, man. We're saving money, we're saving time.
That would be great. I mean, I'm getting a bunch of
All right, well, how are you? Good, okay. Enjoying the
contract. Okay. Yeah.